It's 12:30, and it's time for the community comment with Kevin Haugen.
Well, thank you very much, and good afternoon. Welcome to today's community comment. Our guest on the program this afternoon is Dodge County Sheriff Dale Schmidt. Sheriff, thank you so much for coming into the studio today.
Well, happy to be here, as always. I just took a little bit of time away from going out and tossing the ball back and forth a little bit, getting all warmed up and ready to go and rock and roll and hit some balls, so getting into the softball feel. So took some time to come talk to our listeners while I'm getting ready for this weekend's big event.
Yeah, we greatly appreciate you taking some time off of getting your arm into are you going to be the starting pitcher?
No, I'm usually the first baseman.
Okay.
The big guy that can catch the ball.
Okay. That's so. Like Prince Fielder was for the Brewers back in the day. All right, there we go.
Yes.
Well, that sort of leads us into our first main discussion topic today on community comment. Oh, first, before we get into that, I should remind our listeners, if they do have a question for the sheriff, they can call in at 885-4446, or they can text a question in to 887-9595. But you mentioned it. Upcoming is the Dodge County Sheriff's Office versus the Beaver Dam Police Department Softball with the Cause event. Now, this is the third year that this has been going on. It's been a great success.
It really has been. We've been able to donate a lot of money to a lot of different people throughout the 3 years that we've been doing this at the sheriff's office. We always split it up. The police department takes half, we take half, and then we give it to our charity of choice. They have their own Beaver Dam Charities group that they utilize, but we've been able to give the sheriff's office side to some individuals that were. We were ravaged by a hurricane down in Florida 1 year. The last year, we helped out one of our own employees whose wife is still suffering from some very serious cancer. And we've been able to help that family out. Between that and other events that we did, we raised a lot of money for them just to keep them up and running, getting food and so forth. And this year, we are donating all of our proceeds to a little boy. A little boy that I know, this is really good radio. If you can see this ad that I have in front of me, I strongly recommend that just for the sake of seeing this little boy, you either go to our Facebook page. I'm sure you'll have it on Daily Dodge. Mm-hmm. We also have it on our Sheriff's Office app in the news section. This little boy, Maverick Matuszewski, is 4 years old, and you can see the smile on his face in these pictures. Just a fantastic little boy. He's 4 years old, and right now he's down in Tennessee getting treatment for brain cancer. And certainly very, very stressful, not only on him, but his family that I know very well, and they are struggling to get through all of this, and it's neat to see the smiles on his face when I have been able to see him. But we're raising some funds to help out that family with the costs that they have to incur, because insurance doesn't cover everything. You've got airline and driving costs and fuel and food and all kinds of different things, and very important that we help out this family, and really looking forward to people. If you're not going to come out for a really, really awesome game where the sheriff's office beats the police department, come out to help out this family and raise some funds. And the police department has joined us this year. All of our proceeds are going to go to the Matuszewski family to help them out.
Yeah, I saw that posted this morning, I think, by the Beaver Dam Police Department Facebook page that they are following suit with the sheriff's office and will be giving all proceeds from the monies raised during this weekend's event to that family and the difficult situation that they're dealing with right now. So a great cause to come out and support. You mentioned the sheriff's office beating the Beaver Dam Police Department. What's the overall record during?
It's 1-1, and there's a reason for that. Why it's 1-1?
Is it controversial?
It's a solid 1-1. They have the trophy this year, and the reason we let them win last year was because we wanted them to come back and keep doing this year after year. If we just constantly did like the Packers do the Bears, they'd never come back. So we wanted to give them a little taste of victory. We're going to take it back from them on Saturday. But we're going to start out the game right. We've got some cool activities. We're going to start it out with Maverick Matuszewski's siblings are going to be throwing out the first pitches of the game, which will be pretty cool. And we've got raffles out there. We're going to have some mid-game activities that go on. We have our activities coordinator does a fantastic job. We're really proud of all the work that that activities coordinator does. You know, I don't know if you've ever heard of her. Her name is Cassandra Schmidt. She does a fantastic job. She's also, if you look at the bottom of this flyer here, she's also providing $2,500, I believe it was. I don't want to quote her wrong here, but I believe it was $2,500. She's matching the first $2,500 there for this event. But she does things with the kids and races out there. We have a great time. Then there is a pie in the face contest at the end, and we're still confirming who's going to be there. I have heard that a new district attorney we have might be coming. School superintendent might be there. We haven't confirmed yet if the mayor might be involved. Not sure yet. There's no confirmation. We're still waiting on some of that, but there will be pie in somebody's face, and if nobody shows up, we're going to drag Wade out there. we'll put pie in his face. I mean, why not?
I can totally get behind that idea.
Who doesn't like pie in the face of Wade?
Oh, yeah. Right? I mean, he already had a pie in the face a couple months ago.
I know.
He's used to it.
I voted for the other side. So, who doesn't like to make Wade's face look a little bit better with a little pie in the face? So, but at the end of the day, I think he might be okay. I think we have some other contestants. And then we certainly have people pay to see who's going to get the pie and whose face.
Is that how that works? Is that you donate to who you want to see get a pie in the face, or you donate to the other person?
Well, that's always the confusing part. I'm going to leave that to the activities coordinator to define that on Saturday when we are out there to how those funds are going to be allocated. But one way or another, a pie will go in somebody's face.
What kind of pie?
Probably cream pie, kind of
messy. It's gonna be a messy pie.
I'll tell you, whoever's doing this, after having the pie in the face contest down at the Pave thing this last year, the shirt that I was wearing that day I can never wear again. So bring a shirt that can get dirty and you might not want to use again. So.
Great.
Be a good time. It'll be a great time. Be a lot of scoring by our team. And I anticipate a victory and a lot of fun had by everybody regardless, because we're going to give some money to a great family.
Yeah. So, again, the charity softball with the cause game this weekend, September 23rd. Game time starts at 12:30. It's at the Beaver Dam Athletic Field West Diamond this Saturday. People can start arriving around 11, I'm sure, before that time.
Oh, yeah. We'll have concessions available. We've got pizza and soda, and we've got some raffle prizes. And come on out for lunch. Stay for the game. It's going to be a good time. Lots of things to do. We'll have some squad cars out there. We might even bring some nobody ever wants to see the fire trucks, but we'll probably have a couple fire trucks and ambulance out there as well, kidding firefighters. We'll have some good things to look at as well, and it'll be a good time.
Fantastic. Again, this weekend, Saturday, September 23rd, around 11 o'clock, people could start showing up, or even a little earlier, game time, 12:30. Goes to around 3 o'clock, 3:30, roughly, is when it wraps up.
Yeah, when they start licking their wounds because they're losing, we'll probably...
Is there a mercy rule in effect that you call the game if it's over 10-run deficit? Or
no mercy.
Okay, you just go mercy until the end, and whatever the score is, that's the score.
Right.
Great.
Yeah, we're not going to let them add innings. I think the first year we might have added an inning for them to try to come back, and they couldn't do that. So, but we're going to have a good time, and I know we like to have that good competitive spirit between us and the Beaver Dam Police Department, and we'll see who comes out on top, usually us, but it'll be a good time.
What's been the community support in terms of just showing up? You know, you've raised a healthy amount of money, but just the people there, what you've heard from them attending this, the great causes that the money raised go towards. Just what have you heard from the community about this event and what it brings to people who need help?
It's It's always neat to see new people come out there, and there are, the stands are always full. We get some good, real positive feedback from all of this. And the other part of it you don't see are the people that are donating raffle baskets and things that are may not be able to be there but are supporting the event by donating things so that we can raise some funds. And so I really appreciate it. There's been a lot of community support for this, and each year gets a little bit better than the years have passed.
Great. And I'm sure people can, if they can't make the game on Saturday, drop off a donation at any point for this cause?
Yeah, absolutely. And the community or the activities coordinator is also the raffle coordinator. Again, Cassandra Schmidt, if you haven't heard of her, she's got her office down on South Spring Street. You can always drop something off by her or give one of us a call and we can get it picked up.
Fantastic. Again, this Saturday, September 23rd, and all donations go to Maverick, who's battling brain cancer right now. So it's going, all the money's going to a great cause. And right. We all give Maverick our prayers and best wishes with what he's dealing with right now. Hope it ends well for everyone involved in that situation.
Yeah, we're praying for him and a lot of people on his side and a lot of really good talent and doctors helping him out right now. So and one last credit I do want to give Katie Hunt Photography helped us out with the really wonderful photographs that we were able to use in this and so we want to give her some credit as well. So great. But thank you to everybody who's helping out with this fantastic event.
Fantastic. Deers, they're coming out in force this time of the year. It seems like you can't, especially driving around Dodge County, you can go a couple seconds between deer sightings, and it can be a dangerous thing for motorists out there to have to keep an eye out for this, and can cause some serious damage if you hit a deer while on the roadway. But Sheriff, what's some of the recommendations that you give for drivers out there on the road as now we get into the fall season, deer hunting picks up now? What do they need to know?
Well, I always recommend, my number one recommendation is to try not to hit them in the first place. I say that with a little bit of jest, but it's actually serious. What is one way that you can avoid that is being a defensive driver again. I remember when I was here in Beaver Dam going through Best Way of Driving School back in the day, I still remember the instructor telling us, scan 12 seconds ahead of you. 12 seconds is a long ways in the country, but it comes up very, very quickly. And how do you figure that out? Well, as you're driving down the road, you're listening to us on the radio right now, practice. Take a look at a telephone pole and count how many seconds until you get to that telephone pole. That's how far out you try to figure out what 12 seconds is and be scanning the ditch line into the fields, not just on the road. Know what's coming out. Know what could jump out in front of you. In the city, that 12 seconds is a lot shorter because you're supposed to be going a lot slower. So you don't have to watch quite as far out, but same thing there. You're watching, you might not be watching for deer. I mean, it can happen in the city, but might be watching for pedestrians, kids, animals, those types of things running around. Scan and watch. The best way to not be involved in a crash is to avoid that crash because you see it coming ahead of time and you can slow down. The second thing is where there's one, there's usually more. They usually travel in packs of three or four, and so if one comes across the road, make sure you're stopping. I've seen it happen where I'm driving down the road and I see a car hit a deer and then another car hits another deer, or a car hits a deer or stops for a deer. They miss, they go across, they take off, and then the second one comes out and they have that impact. And I've seen those things happen. So where there are one, there are more. Keep that in mind. If you can avoid that, we don't have any problems. But this is what you do if you got them dart out in front of you and you don't see them coming. Hit your brakes. Try and slow down. Don't swerve if you can help it. Try and stay within your lane if at all possible. Don't swerve into the shoulder. Don't swerve into oncoming traffic. Try and stay in your lane. Hit your brakes. Try and stop and avoid that. That is your best course of action. You go into the ditch. You go on the cross the center line. You might hit somebody. You might roll your vehicle. It makes a bad situation worse. If you hit a deer, it happens, but I hate for you to make it worse and you crash, roll, and get hurt. If you do hit that deer, pull over to the side of the road, get the car off the road if you're able to do so, and call 911. You're involved in a crash. Call 911. We will help you through that. Our dispatchers are going to be that first line that you're going to talk to, and they're going to explain to you Or they're going to ask you if you're hurt. A lot of times people are involved in crashes. They don't realize that they're hurt. They'll get to a scene and they'll have blood running down their face. They have no idea. So they're going to walk you through some things. They're going to ask you how much damage is to the vehicle. They're going to work through, do we need to come out and do a report? They're going to work through all of those things. Do you need a wrecker? They're going to help you. That's what we're there for, to help you through those tragedies, those incidents. So that's what we're looking for. Just be real careful. Slow down, especially in dawn and dusk time. That's the biggest time when we see the most crashes. Slow down. Pay attention to what's going on around you. Hopefully you don't have to worry about hitting one of those deer.
Now, is it required to call police or call law enforcement if you strike a deer? And does a report have to be filled out for your purposes, for insurance purposes? Is that required? Are drivers required to do that?
That's a great question. And anytime you are involved in a crash that initiates on a roadway, which this would, if there is damage more than $1,000 to any one vehicle, or if somebody is hurt, or if government property was damaged where there's more than $200, so that necessarily probably wouldn't count here. So if you have $1,000 worth of damage to your car and you estimate it to be that, then yeah, you're going to want us to come to a report. If there's an injury, absolutely we have to be there. If it's borderline and probably under, you don't necessarily have to do that, but maybe you go get an estimate later and you find out, oh yeah, it was $1,200 worth of damage. That has to be reported. But then we're going to have you do that through the state DOT website and do a self-report if you're reporting it after the fact. So call us. We'll help you through all that to see if we need to respond to get that crash report done for you on that date. We'll give you guidance on what to do.
Does your office have any sort of official tracking or statistics when it comes to the number of car versus deer crashes that you guys respond to in a year or maybe in a season? Because it tends to be spring and fall when this tends to be a bigger of an issue. Is it 50 over that course of that time? Is it 100, or is it or does it depend on other circumstances that could change that statistic year to year?
Yeah, we do take a look at that every single year, and I compile the numbers of incidents that we have within the sheriff's office every year, and just off the top of my head here, I'm able to tell you that our accidents with deer so far this year have been 234, They're in a little bit of a lull right now, but they're going to be picking up shortly. If I take a look back at 2022, again, just off the top of my head randomly here, we had 485 deer crash, and that's just the sheriff's office. So if a local PD took one, that's going to be separate. But we had 485 of them last year, and they really started to uptick in September, but October and November were the big months of the year. October we had 62, November we had 102. Those are the two big years, and we're almost there. We'll just go back one more year off the top of my head again, 418 in 2021. So again, October and November were our big months in the year where we saw a lot of them at 69 and 95 that year. So we're coming up on a time where we see a lot of them. Usually, again, it's in the afternoon, about that rush hour coming home from work time, about 4 o'clock to 7 o'clock is when we see most of them. And then in the morning, the same time, people are going to work early in the morning. About 5 to 7 in the morning is when we're seeing the vast majority of those crashes.
Sheriff, you continue to astound me with your ability to remember all those intricate numbers. It's incredible.
Right off the top of my head, yes.
You did mention something that I feel like can be applicable to anything, not just when people are having to look out for deers, and that's not swerving when there's any animal coming into your line of path when you're driving down the roadway. It's always recommended to, if you can't stop in time, and to avoid hitting whatever animal that is, don't swerve either way and try to avoid hitting it. It's best to just keep going forward, and if you hit it, it's better to hit that animal than another car or wind up in a ditch with the more serious injury.
Right. It's very important. And actually, it brings me back to training. When I used to work down in Greene County back in 2003, I was going through training, and I hit and killed a bunny. Crossed the road in the middle of the night, and, I tried to stop. I couldn't. At the end of the day, my training officer documented that. hit and killed a bunny. And I said, why did you document that? He said, because it shows that you had the wherewithal to not swerve, that you were okay with running over that animal, and you didn't put us in a dangerous situation by swerving and maybe going into the ditch or something like that. And I thought, well, okay, that makes sense. Something I'll never forget, and obviously 20 years later, I still haven't forgotten that. But it's important that you not do those swerving maneuvers and that you... You do your best to avoid, but not swerve into the ditch or another lane and put yourself in even further risk of harm or somebody else putting them in harm's way.
We're talking with Dodge County Sheriff Dale Schmidt today on Community Comment. You can call in 885-4446 or text a question in at 887-9595. With fall harvest season here, another thing that drivers need to be watchful while they're out on the roadways is farm equipment that going to be increasing pretty quickly here as harvest season gets in full swing. What are the laws, the rules that drivers need to know when it comes to driving by past on the other side of the road with farm equipment?
Yeah, they're already starting. It's really picking up out there. Seeing a lot more of it, and we will see a lot more of that in coming weeks. The combines and the grain carts and the semis and the tractors, they're going to be out and about in full force because they have to get the crops off the field. And they're trying to do so as quickly as possible, and we want to work together with them so that they can do that and do that safely. As I say, every year, there are responsibilities on everybody's side. Number one, as far as the semi drivers call it, the four-wheelers, the cars, trucks that are out on the road, you need to be patient and allow these farmers to get done what they need to do. It's only for a few weeks that they're out there doing this, but you need to be patient. You can never, ever, ever pass a farm implement in a no-passing zone. I don't care how slow they're going. You cannot pass them. If they're pulling over to the side of the road, like we asked them to do, that's different. But when they're just going down the road, you cannot pass them in a no-passing zone. You need to be aware that, yeah, they've got flashing lights and they've got directional lights on many of these. Some of them might not. They need to do hand signals in those cases. They may turn into a field drive that you might not be expecting or seeing. So going around them, you need to be real careful. Make sure you know what their intent is. Are they pulling into the field or are they going to continue down the road? Make sure you know what's going on. Try to make eye contact with them if you can and make sure you know what they're doing. On the flip side, the farmers, again, need to work together to try and keep traffic flowing. You can't have a line of vehicles stacked up behind you. If you're seeing multiple vehicles, you need to do your best to get off to the side of the road and let these vehicles go around you. You can't just sit there and hold them up. And you've got the no-passing zone. You can't just hold them up and try to make their day miserable. You got to work together and let them get around you. If you have an ability to get over so that they can go by, you need to do that. If there is a paved portion or large gravel shoulder that you can get over there, you have an obligation to do that. And I always remind everybody, and I know farmers don't like to hear this, but the law does state that no one may obstruct traffic by slow speed. That is a state statute that is on the books. It doesn't matter if it's a tractor or if it's a more experienced individual with a long in age that drives really slow. You can't obstruct traffic. You have to allow those individuals to be able to move through. Understanding there has to be some give and take there. There's going to be some time when traffic is slowed down. But I've had tractors where there have been 15, 20, 25, 40 cars behind them. You can't do that. That is going to draw attention and create a lot more safety concerns than if you just let them go by. I know some of the instructors out there in the past have said that you have that right to the road. You don't. Under the state statute, you don't have that right to maintain that lane and have that traffic back up behind you. You can be out there if you don't have that traffic there, but you got to work together with people. And I think, you know, if it's a short amount of time that you're out there and trying to be safe and make sure that you're safe on the tractor, that's fine, but you got to be courteous and let those people go by.
So set the scene for me, Sheriff, just so I can, if I'm driving down the road, I know what to look for, because I will see farm equipment driving off to the side, maybe not all the way off to the side, at a very slow speed. So if I see that, and there's, you know, the double yellows on my left, and I can't pass on that side of the road, do I have to wait there? There's maybe like a little bit of a sliver of a road to pass by on the left of that farm equipment. Am I having to wait until that equipment stops entirely, moves off entirely to the side of the road? I can't go by them whatsoever.
Yeah, if they're in that lane, you're not going to be able to go around them until you get into a passing zone. You have to stay there. You cannot pass them while they're up there. If they move over to the side of the road and there's room to get around, we're going to look at that. Okay, there's enough room to do it as long as it's done safely. But as you're passing, if you're looking at it like you would pass a normal vehicle where they're fully in the lane, and it's in a no-passing zone, you can't do that. You got to use your head. We got to be safe out there. And passing in a no-passing zone simply is not allowed. And we certainly have and will continue to write tickets to people who do that.
Now, maybe thinking of this situation from the farmer's side, they're, you know, driving one of their big equipments down the road, and they see a line of, you know, 30 cars, 20 cars behind them stacking up quickly. And, you know, they, you know, look to their right and they see there's a little bit of maybe a drop off in the ditch, and they don't want to risk going over and having their equipment fall or get damaged or going on private property and ruining, because some of the equipment is pretty big and can damage the grass, the gravel that's in there. What do you recommend that they do?
The first location that you have that you are able to move over to get off of the road to allow some traffic to go by, you need to do that. If you've got a large driveway coming up that you can just pull off into the approach of the driveway and let them go by, that's a great place to do that. Understandable that if there's a drop-off there, you're not going to be able to get off the road. I get that. It's if there is an opportunity, if there is a location for you to move over to allow that traffic to go by, you need to do that. If you can't, if there's nothing there, you can't. Okay, you can't. But we need to make every effort to try and keep everybody working together they got to get to work, you got to get to work. You're both going to work most likely, and we need to work together to make sure that happens.
I always like to know these things, not because I anticipate getting any sort of enforcement taken against me, but what is the penalty? Is it demerit points, a ticket, if a law enforcement officer spots a car zooming past the farm equipment in a double yellow that they shouldn't have? What could they expect if they get pulled over?
There are demerit points, and there is a citation for one of the violations that might be out there, and there could be a slew of them, anywhere It could be passing the no passing zone, which is close to a $300 citation and 4 points, or you're looking at impeding traffic by slow speed. That's about a $200 ticket and 3 or 4 points, so there's a number of different citations. It's going to be roughly in that $200 to $300 area for those citations if we have to issue one, and we don't like to do that. We would prefer to prefer to educate people ahead of time so that they can avoid that if at all possible. And of course, we're going to use discretion. It's not going to be a citation, automatic citation every time. It's going to be dependent on the circumstances. But if everybody works together and everybody plays well together out on the road, it makes things a lot easier for us. And I don't get complaints from either side. But I tell you, we do get complaints from both sides. It's not just one side or the other. And so we have to weigh that out. It's not who's loudest that wins out on this. We take every incident into consideration as far as what happened and how are we going to move forward with this, and does somebody need a citation because, frankly, they're refusing to, especially if they're just blatantly going to say, I'm going to keep doing it, well, then you're probably going to get a ticket. If you say, okay, I understand, I will do my best to try and avoid this in the future, chances are, okay, we've gained compliance. There's a better chance that you're not necessarily going to receive that citation. Not saying you won't, but better chance you're not going to receive a citation. We're looking for compliance for everybody to get along and trying to be safe.
Dodge County Sheriff Dale Schmidt is our guest today on Community Comment. Again, you can call in at 885-4446 or text 887-9595. We have to take a quick break. More Community Comment is coming up next. Well, welcome back into today's Community Comment. Our guest on the program is Dodge County Sheriff Dale Schmidt. If you have a question for the sheriff, you can call in at 885-4446. Or if you don't want to be on the air, which is totally fine, you can text a question in at 887-9595. Sheriff, school is in full swing as we sit here now, coming up to the end of September. All kids are back. All teachers are back. There's still, I'm sure, a lot to remind listeners out there when it comes to, you know, driving by school buses, driving in public zones, speed limit changes, crossing guards, people to keep an eye out for. What should our listeners know?
School buses are out and about on the road every morning, every afternoon, and we always get complaints every year about people not stopping for the school bus. And so I just thought I'd do a quick reminder on school buses and school bus safety. Reminder that when the lights are red, flashing red, and the bus is stopped, those are the two components that are needed. You have to stop for that school bus, regardless if you're coming from in front of them or behind them. They have to... You have to stop for them. They got the yellow flashing lights on. You should be prepared to stop. But once those lights are on and that bus is stopped, you may not pass it. And we're going to write you a citation. That citation is expensive. I believe it's about $350-ish, $325. Individuals are going to get a citation for that. We don't have to be present. The school bus driver may be reported to us, give us a statement, and we may issue the citation based on the statement that you didn't stop for that school bus. Very important. The only time you don't have to stop for a school bus when it's stopped and the light's on is if you're on a divided highway. So trying to think of one here in Beaver Dam, I guess the divided section right in front of Walker's, between Piggly Wiggly and Walker's, there's a little divided section. Let's say for some reason they're stopping on a roadway like that. If you're going the other direction on the other side of the divided highway, you do not need to stop in that circumstance.
So, great advice. When it comes to, you know, kids walking into school, actually, before we get to that, we do have a caller calling into the program today, and I want to welcome them on to Community Comment.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Say, on Highway, I think it's B, where Mech is that B or E? That's B, right?
Where Mech is.
Where Highway W starts.
Okay.
North and south.
Okay.
Okay, there's an embankment that's quite steep. As you're coming down the hill when you're going south,
Sure.
There's an embankment on the right-hand side, and, yeah, I don't know if it's ever happened, but when it's... somebody's going at a higher clip of speed or even coasting, if they happen to slide or something like that, they could roll their car 3-4 times right there on the right. There should be a barrier or something there.
You're talking about just on the north side of Beaver Dam here between Spring Street and Center Street out there?
Where Mech is?
Yep.
Not Spring Street.
The south end of W.
The south end of W on the north side of Beaver Dam, yes. I think I know exactly what you're talking about.
Well, anyway, there's this, you know, all these lots there that, you know, they have for sale. Well, there's a steep embankment right there.
Okay. That would be something.
You know, if somebody slides with their vehicle or something, you know, they can roll their car over and get hurt really bad right there. There should really be a barrier of some kind there.
That would be something you would need to take up with the Dodge County Highway Department or the Highway Committee. They would have jurisdiction over those types of things. I don't set up the signs and the barricades or make recommendations for that. That all comes from the Highway Commission. So that would be where you would need to start with that issue.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Well, thank you very much for the phone call. Again, if you have a question for the sheriff, you can call in at 885-4446 or text 887-9595. Do you have another caller on? All right, so I saw a line lit up, and I was wondering if that was another caller on the phone, but we do not. So, going back to school buses and what people should be aware about when they're seeing one in front of them. You know, you mentioned the divided highway. That's the only time that somebody can pass a school bus without having any sort of concern about being stopped or getting tickets. And you mentioned it's pretty significant. Do we know off the top? I mean, you're great with numbers off the top of your head, but do we know what the fines are, citations, what that is, what that's for?
The failure to stop for a school bus is in the $325 to $350 range. I forget exact amount, but it's roughly in that area, and I believe it's a 4-point violation. So it's a pricey citation, and so please, if those lights are on, the bus is stopped, come to that complete stop. If you see their yellow lights come on, be prepared to stop and do so if you're able to. It's just like the stoplights out in the streets. Contrary to popular belief, a yellow light at a stoplight does not mean speed up to try and get through it. It means slow down if you're able to and stop. Same thing with a school bus. If you are able to slow down and stop for that school bus, you should be doing that.
Is responding to car versus school bus crashes, is that a common thing in Dodge County, or is that something you only see every once in a while?
We get maybe one or two of those a year, and usually they're very insignificant crashes, and many times there's no kids on the bus or very few, thankfully. But I'll tell you, as a law enforcement officer, it's one of those things that, one, we never want to see because we don't want to see the kids get hurt, but two, because it's one of the more complex crashes that you have to write because of the number of occupants on a bus. Thankfully we don't see very many of them. We've got excellent bus drivers that are really, really, really careful with our kids.
I feel like sometimes when we do see press release, I remember one school bus crash or car hit a school bus a couple years ago, and it was, you know, the sunlight, I think, was affecting their view, and that can be something that is difficult to keep an eye out for when you're driving. I mean, it's easy to get blindsided by the sun, but you really have to pay attention when you're driving in the morning and making sure that you're not visually impaired, that you are going to hit something.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've seen some of those types of crashes, not only with school buses, but, you know, if you look back to a couple of years ago when we had the fatal crash involving the Amish individual down on Highway 16 and 60 by Jay, the sun and fog played a huge role in that, and not being able to see, and so it's very easy to lose objects that are in front of you in that sun. So it's obviously sunglasses and those visors coming down are helpful, but slowing down in those circumstances is great as well. You never know if it's going to be a school bus in front of you.
We did get a couple questions in from our text line. One of them, and I'll read it as it was texted in, but I think they meant something else, as our producer Charlie filled me in on. But the question is, can there be a fine for kids crossing the sidewalk crosswalk? And I think maybe they mean crossing not at the crosswalk, maybe crossing someplace else, not where there's crossing guards or anything like that.
Yeah, no, there's no such thing as jaywalking in Wisconsin. So, no, crosswalks are there to provide a safe place for people to cross, and pedestrians have the right of way within a crosswalk. If a pedestrian crosses outside of a crosswalk, there's no protection for them with the law as far as the right of way. So you still can cross there and need to be careful, but you don't have that crosswalk protection so much. So you can cross anywhere, just got to be real, real careful, extra careful when you're outside the crosswalk.
The other question that we got in through the text line, and this is a topic that has come up a couple of times in the last few months that you've been on the program, Sheriff, and that's how are the lights coming at Swan City Park? Are there going to be more lights than last year this year?
The lights are coming along, and we've closed out our sponsorship period for everything, except for if you still want to donate to help out with the spring house to renovate that. You can still do that. You can do that all through the season into next year. Hopefully next summer we can work on that. But as far as the lights go, we haven't started getting things quite ready yet. October is when we really start hitting the ground on that. We've got a few things we're working on right now, ordering some supplies and getting them in. But October, we're going to start hitting the ground running, and the last week in October is, believe it or not, when I start putting things up more up in the air. And then the first 2 weeks in November is when we start putting up the lights in the park. As far as more lights, I think we'll have a couple more lights here and there. It's not going to be significantly more than last year, because this year we were focusing on the spring house. That was our biggest push. So we've got some replacements for some things that we're starting to get a little bit older. I mean, we're in our seventh year now, and some things needed to be replaced. Some of the lights stopped working on some things. We've got some other things that we wanted to throw in there because they're not too difficult to create, so we're going to put some of those up. But it'll be beautiful, just like it was last year, with some additional enhancements, and I think everybody will be very pleased with what we've got.
Do we have a fundraising update on where things are at with the Spring House renovations? Is it close? Are we still having to get some more money coming in for that?
We are still. I don't have a final quote from WDS Construction, who's helping us with this. We are roughly in the $20,000 to $25,000 range is what we've raised so far. We're thinking we're going to need a lot more money there yet to get what we really want to do to maintain the structure and paint it and not change it in any way, and do a couple improvements on like the concrete. It's going to be north of that yet. So I'm certainly looking for donations to help facilitate that, in conversation with the city to try and help facilitate some of those donations as well, or work with the city to finish out what we can't get in donations.
And that's kind of what the focus is of the Rotary Lights Committee kind of this year, instead of maybe expanding to new light displays or new type decorations for the park. Really, the focus is, and maybe this is a multi-year thing, not totally sure, but the focus is on revamping that Spring House and making it look. And I think installing lights that will be on year round is also part of those discussions as well.
Yeah, I want to put some lights into the Spring House that don't change the look of the Spring House, but that we can turn on to utilize without putting the ladders up there. Every time I put a ladder on there, it's pushing on some of the wood, especially the older wood, and it'd be a lot better if we can just put some lights on there permanently, and then at Christmas time we can turn them on. Other events through the year, if we want to turn them on, we can do that too. Anything from white to red, white, and blue, like we're doing in the Spring House right now. In the band shell, I've got white lights on in the band shell, but I can change them at any time to be whatever we need them to be. So that's what we would like to do, to keep that historical look, and we need to work with the Historical Society on this yet before we can move forward. But that's our goal, is to try and do some of those things to maintain that look, maintain that historical value, just refresh it, because the wood is rotting and isn't in very good shape anymore.
And that's a big thing to note, is that it's not a rebuilding or restructuring. Right. It is upgrading with how it looks right now. It's not going to change. It's going to stay the same. Just adding a new paint, a coat, making it look like it's a new structure, really. Yeah. It's not going to change anything.
Right. We need to strip all the paint off of there. And replace some of the wood that has rotted out, but then repaint it exactly as it is to make it look like you said, like a brand new building again.
We're talking with Dodge County Sheriff Dale Schmidt on Community Comment today. We have to take a quick break. We'll be back with more Community Comment in just a few minutes. Well, welcome back into Community Comment. Our guest on today's program is Dodge County Sheriff Dale Schmidt. If you have a question for the sheriff, you can call in at 885-4446. We do have a caller on the line, and I want to welcome them onto Community Comment.
Good job, by the way.
Well, thank you, Tyler. Thank you.
Officer Schmidt, I got a question for you.
Okay.
When I was in, I don't know how well you know Watertown, right by our middle school, on how where 6 Main Street meets 4 different streets, and since it's on Highway 16 there, we have that bridge right by the Rock River. Okay. I don't know how many times I've nearly been hit just trying to cross, and I'm right in the crosswalk, right there, and no matter how many times I'm standing there, cars will just not stop.
Sure. Yeah, and
they actually get fined if a cop's right behind them.
If you are in the crosswalk and you are not darting out in front of the traffic, if you are in the crosswalk about to cross, then they have an obligation to yield to pedestrian traffic. So yes, if that happens, they can be stopped and they can be cited for a violation of that. So many times they've got those signs in the middle of that says you must yield to pedestrians. I don't know if they've got one there or not, but that is a requirement that if you are in the crosswalk and you're not darting out, you have ample time to stop. They are required to yield to you.
Yeah, like I said, every time I try, right when I'm in the middle, I have to, and the car's coming down, not even stopping, I have to run quick across.
Sure. Yeah, I know, and that's a busy
like
street.
Said, I've nearly been hit quite a few times. Like I said, it's right by our middle school.
Yeah.
And then after that, I think right after I got out of there, they start putting the signs. And I've seen people, like, put their foot right in the crosswalk, and a car just not even stop, go right past, like, Seriously?
Yeah. Yeah. You gotta be careful. Still be careful as a pedestrian. You'll never win if you take on a car. So be careful, and if they're not going to stop, we'll let them go. But they do have an obligation to stop. Just don't test them.
And I want to thank you for your service that you do.
My pleasure. Thank you, Tyler.
All right. Thank you, Tyler, for the phone call. Again, the number to get into the program is 885-4446. We do have another caller on the line. I want to welcome them on to Community Comment.
Hello. Hey there.
Hi. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes, yes, we can.
Well, I wanted the sheriff to speak to something that I see happening frequently, which is especially on two-lane country roads, but also, you know, towards Madison, people driving very, very closely to the back of my vehicle. Mm. When I was in driver's ed, I think I remember them saying, you know, it's one car length behind for every 10 miles going.
It's a good rule of thumb.
That a little bit?
Sure, that's a good rule of thumb. It's there is no definition as far as what following too closely is, unless you're a commercial motor vehicle. A commercial motor vehicle, like a semi, has to maintain 500 feet behind mm-hmm. the vehicle in front of them. But automobiles, there's nothing that really lays out the distance. Mm-hmm. And I think the reason the legislature does that is because the speed limits change, the size of vehicles change, and they really leave that up to the discretion of the law enforcement officer to make a determination on is that vehicle following too closely, that if the vehicle in front of them needs to make an emergency stop, they're going to be able to stop. And that's kind of what we judge them on, and it's difficult. It's difficult for us to be able to necessarily prove, because even when we have it on video, it, real life, seeing it with your own eyes as compared to seeing it on a video, oftentimes is a little bit different perception. And so we make that determination when we're driving down the road. We see somebody that's following too close. We can make that stop based on, okay, are they a car length behind? We're probably going to pull them over. When we most often issue those citations, unfortunately, is after a crash occurs when somebody rear ends another one. Then it's very clear to us that you were following too close. You were not able to make that evasive maneuver. So it's a tough one. It's a discretionary call based on our observations.
Mm. But in terms of the accidents that you respond to, either, you know, a car braking for a deer or a pedestrian mm-hmm. or whatever, is that something you frequently see where the car behind it also rear ends the car that initially stopped or slowed down because they were following too close, or is it not something you typically
We do see it more often than you think in a lot of these crashes out in the county, or even in the city when somebody is turning in front yeah. of another car, and then the third car rear ends the second car. You know, those are the types of things that we will often, that might be inattentive driving, that could yeah. be following too closely. And so those are the types of things we see that quite a bit, and we do issue citations for it.
Okay. Well, I got to get one of those bumper stickers that says, get off my
bumper.
Rear of my car.
Get off my bumper. So I think that's what you were looking for there. So.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much for the phone call. Again, the number to call in is 885-4446. And the number to text a question in is 887-9595. We did get a text in. We got a real hardball for you, Sheriff. It's from Jeffrey Schmidt, and it's wishing you a happy anniversary in law enforcement.
Yeah, that would be my mom probably prompting my dad to send a text message because, yes, I actually this morning received a message from my first chief when I worked in the village of Winnick County, and he hired me on September 20th of 2020, and Pete Running is his name, and he actually, sorry, Mom, you're late, he actually got to me first and sent me a happy anniversary, work anniversary text this morning, which was pretty cool when your chief from 23 years ago sends you a message like that, and he got me started, and of course, Mom and Dad got me started before that, but he officially got me started and gave me my first badge. And yes, 23 years ago today, it was my first day on the streets up in the village of Winnick County.
And you still love working in law enforcement all these years later. Nothing has changed?
Just about every day, yes.
That's good.
Yes, we've got highs and lows, and I have a lot of high moments, and there are some days that I wish I would have stayed in bed, but most days are pretty good. I love my job and don't plan to go anywhere anytime soon.
That's good to hear, Sheriff. Want to hit just on a couple of topics before we wrap up today's program. One of them is a regular press release that the Sheriff's Office sends out. It's their Law of the Month. And this month it has to deal with churning on those headlamps when the sun starts to go down and it gets a little dark outside.
Yeah, and if you want to follow along or take a look at that Law of the Month, you can always find that on our app. You know, they always put it on Daily Dodge, but we like to get our news out first. On our app, if you just go on the homepage and down in the news section and scroll down, you see the Law of the Month from September. And it's required headlamps or required lamps, lamps meaning lights. The lamps and lights are required to be lit anytime any person is operating during hours of darkness. And an hour of darkness is a half an hour after sunset and a half an hour before sunrise, is what the definition for hours of darkness is. Or if you can't see, if there's adverse weather in front of you that would reduce visibility by up to 500 feet. So if it's raining, if it's snowing, oh, I said that word, if there's fog and it reduces visibility, you need to have your headlights on. And a lot of automatic lights will turn on, but some of the older ones, squad cars are finally getting to automatic lights now, and they hadn't been in the past. Got to make sure you turn them on when that weather changes. So very, very important to keep those on, clean and functioning. You got to make sure that they're working as well. And if they're not working, we may have a conversation about that on the side of the road at some point.
Again, that Law of the Month press release and the state statute that accompanies that, you can read more on the, like the sheriff said, on their sheriff's office app or on their Facebook page. And another press release that they can read in more detail about on the app and on the Facebook page for the sheriff's office is a press release that you guys sent out about a week, 2 weeks ago or so.
Eight days ago. On September 11th at 2:19 p.m. You can see that right on the app.
Well, there you go. Yes. You can get a timestamp of when it was released. Details the dismissal of a federal lawsuit that's been an ongoing story here in Dodge County for a couple of years now. But essentially, Sheriff, I'll let you sort of summarize and break down the news that was reported by you guys a couple of days ago.
Yeah, and unfortunately, there's been a lot of misinformation spread by some, and we'll call it what it is, political rivals out there that don't like me and are creating some facts that just are not factual at all. There was a lawsuit about an individual, Celebri Amakri, that came out about 6 years ago already, and it's been dismissed several times. It has now finally been dismissed by the Seventh Circuit Court. They upheld the dismissal of the federal civil rights lawsuit, and the time to appeal it is gone. This case is closed, and unfortunately, some people have wanted to litigate this in the public rather than litigate it in a courtroom, which is where it should be litigated. Anybody who has any sense at all regarding lawsuits knows that you don't litigate in the public. You do that in the courtroom because it can have potential consequences for you when you get into court. And so the advice of our attorneys is always don't comment during the midst of an active litigation case. And we didn't. And there was a lot of false information that was put out. We put out a press release that was written by our attorneys, our county attorneys, a while back after it was dismissed the first time, and unfortunately it was appealed at that point. So we waited until everything is done and put out some additional information. And all of this is factual information. You can read it on the app, all of it in detail. But it's all factual information based off an internal or based off an investigation that was done, and is backed up by reports, backed up by actual interviews and so forth. This isn't information that we are just throwing out there because it's something we wanted to say. It's something that was investigated, and they're the facts of the investigation. We didn't do this investigation for any other purpose other than to see if this individual could come into the Dodge County Jail for professional visits. We did this investigation, and there's a number of very concerning things in this background, including statements from law enforcement officers, investigations from law enforcement officers in Illinois that this individual was breaking into people's homes, approaching women who have been sleeping, touching their feet, and taking their underwear. Very concerning statements we received from other law enforcement agencies. There's a lot of information out there that we made up a lot of things that it was a false name. No, this individual used his brother's name and identity to avoid arrest. There's a whole slew of information there, and I don't want to go on and litigate this here on the air either, but I want to go out there and let everybody know that the information that you may have heard from individuals who are political, they're political rivals is what it is, was fabricated information. Apparently, some are saying that show us the emails. There's no emails that change any of the facts. There's nothing out there that is that we, as part of our investigation, that was fabricated. It's all based on our investigator, who they even went and said we hired this investigator simply for this case. No, he does our background investigations. That's his whole job. Everything that was said was twisted, and it got very frustrating to sit there and listen to all of this because none of it was true. And unfortunately, we're seeing these same individuals say the same thing about all these different topics. I heard it again last night from one of the individuals that our accreditation wasn't actually the full accreditation, and throwing that out there as fact. And no, he's wrong. It was a full accreditation that we were cited with. And these are individuals that are citing it in public settings, on social media pages. And I'm here to tell you that these individuals are posting things and saying things that are blatantly false. And I don't know why they think they can get away with this. And when I call them out and I come back and I present them with the actual facts, they think that they have the right to say whatever they want to combat it with no facts to back it up. And that gets very, very frustrating. If I am wrong, so be it. But don't make something up and tell me that I'm wrong. If I'm wrong, I'll admit to it. But these are the facts that our attorneys put together. They were very clear. I didn't put these facts together. These are what the attorneys put together, and we sent it out on their behalf because we have the news media release availability. These are facts. What you're hearing from the other side is made up and totally outlandish, and I'm just tired of it. So what we needed to do in this case was put out that these are what the facts are. The courts have held that there is no further appeal. There was no criminal investigation here. We didn't allow this person into our jail because we weren't going to allow him to send letters to individuals saying that he was going to be able to rub their feet when they got out. So we wanted to set the record straight. He wasn't allowed in. Immigration came in, said he has a detainer. We need to detain him. We put him in our jail because they had a detainer. We didn't arrest him. The immigration folks did. We are simply a holding facility, and they placed him there. When they told us to let him out, we did. That was all on them. And if there was problems with the detention portion of it, that falls back to the federal government. We were simply the holding facility under a contract. So if you have questions about it, I would urge you to go to our app, go to our Facebook page, go to our website, read the full press release, because what you're seeing from some other news outlets out there and from other individuals out there is just blatant, not true statements that are made up. They're claiming it came from a federal lawsuit. I'm here to tell you, you can say anything that you want to in a lawsuit. It doesn't have to be true.
885-4446 to get on the program. We do have a caller on the line. I want to welcome them on to Community Comment.
Hello, this is what the sheriff calls his political rival, which I am not. I'm just disappointed that he escalated this when it was all dead and in the water, gone. I just urge people to always look for both sides of the story. We are not trying to be his political rival. We have come on the scene because, he gets too involved with Dodge County Board business. He actually asked me to help get two people off the board when I came to the first meeting I ever attended in 2020. There's a lot of other things going on here that you will not hear from our sheriff. And go to standupdodgecounty.com to learn more if you want to know. Thank you very much.
And in response to that, most of the things that this individual is saying are not backed up by fact. The statements that are made are actually refuted by district attorneys in Dodge County, in Green Lake County, other investigations that have been in writing. But apparently those facts are not good enough, and unfortunately we continue to hear a twisted version of events that simply are not supported by fact. And he can have his own opinion. But unfortunately, most of the opinions out there are not supported by fact and are clearly refuted by documentation.
Dodge County Sheriff Dale Schmidt on today's community comment. Want to thank the sheriff so much for coming in today.
My pleasure to be here, and make sure you come out and watch us play softball and raise money for Maverick on Saturday. It's going to be a great day. Help us out to support this family who's really struggling. So we look forward to seeing you next month.
All right. That is going to do it for today's community comment.